Okay, we've got our change. We're ready to go. We're ready to go. Let's go to the doctor's opinion, Joe. We can do that later. That'd be all right.
Okay, we're going to the doctor's opinion. What is the problem? The foundation of the program. Now, this procedure is simple. The book is so simple. And it's the procedure on which you solve any problem. It's to work on any problem. It's the way you fix your car. First thing you got to find what the problem is. Then you can develop the solution. Then you can carry out the program of action and you can recover.
Joe, I've made a decision. I'm going to take a little action.
Okay.
I'll be back in a minute.
Okay. They can't take it. They can't take it. So there are three things that you have to do to solve a problem. And the first important main thing is what is the problem? Because that information, if it's not correct, will take the wrong solution and then you still have the problem. Dr. Silverworth began his work, and God, this great man, in about 1930 at the Towns Hospital. As an intern, he had practiced, and in his internship, he became very interested in alcoholics. For some reason, he liked alcoholics in the hospital. Most doctors don't. You know, they say, drunken won't do what you tell him to do, which is true. Right? He don't pay his bill no way, which is probably true. But Dr. Silverworth loved drunks. And he became right attached to him. And doing his, after he got out of school, he went to work, set up a practice and practiced medicine for a period of time. And during the Depression, the stock market crashed. He lost his money like everybody else around New York in the stock market. And had to take a job at the Towns Hospital for $40 a week. Now, $40 a week wasn't what $40 is today. But it was pretty good making a dollar a day, I imagine. But Dr. Silverworth began to work with alcoholics. Charlie Towns had his little operation there. A little drying out place. It was $10 a day to stay there. And Bill was there, financed by his brother-in-law, all that. Who got him out every time. He paid for everything Bill did and helped him. So it was there that he began to develop some ideas. He was interested in alcoholics, and he studied his alcoholics, and he talked to them. And this man really got into understanding this problem and understanding the alcoholics. And the amazing thing to me is I read the doctor's opinion over and over and over and over. And he talks about the craving of alcohol and the obsession of the mind. And he talks about these things in depth. And he is a non-alcoholic person. He's never experienced these things. And he must really had some insight into working with these people. He begins on mostly on page 2. The physician who at our request gave us this letter has been kind enough to enlarge upon the views in another statement which follows. In this statement, he confirms that we who suffered alcoholic torture must believe that the body of the alcoholic is quite as abnormal as the mind. And it's the first time in history that anybody has brought up the body of the alcoholic. It seems strange. Since the beginning of time, people have been discussing alcoholism. Since alcohol was discovered, there's been a problem. It goes all the way back to the Bible. I like the one in Proverbs 23:29 to the end. Solomon was a great man. People had problems that came to Solomon. He was a social worker, a psychologist of his time. And he could solve human problems. He was good at it. But he was baffled by the alcoholic. And he said, when I see it, he said, who has wounds, who has cause? Who has wounds without cause? They that tarry longeth to wine. You know what I mean? And he said, you would be as one who lies down in the midst of a sea. You know how your bed tossed at night. And he said, you have beaten me and I felt it not. The next morning I got them bumps on me. I don't know where they come from. Sure knew some of us fellas, because he said, thine eyes shall behold strange women.
Alcoholics really haven't changed a hell of a lot since that time.
And thy heart shall utter perverse things.
Like, trust me, honey. Yeah. Please trust me.
But still yet, they rise in the morning and they seek it yet again. Alcoholics have never changed. It's the same as it was in Solomon. They're doing the same thing today they were doing in Solomon days. Nothing new about it. But no one never understood the problem. Therefore, we can do nothing about it. Today, we have a lot of major health problems like AIDS and cancer. Major health problems that we can't solve because we don't know what the problem is. We're hunting to find out what is the problem. The solution already exists. We can identify the solution, we can find the problem. Alcoholism baffled mankind for many years. Then Dr. Silkworth's come along. And we tried all kind of solutions, and they're still doing it today. So Dr. Silkworth studied, and no one had ever mentioned all these years about the body being involved. That amazes me, and I look at it. Why mankind didn't have sense enough to realize that the body is involved as well as the mind. All the ideas about alcoholism before Silkworth were the mind, weak will, sin. Nobody had never mentioned the body. That's what you put the alcohol in the body. Look like that should have just seen that had something to do with it.
Container ought to have something to do with it, shouldn't it? Let's go to Roman numeral 23, XXIII. And let's start looking at the doctor's opinion.
Yeah, that's what we are. That's what we are, Charlie.
Okay.
We're on Roman numeral page 24.
Oh, you are? Yeah. I'm sorry. How in the hell did you get over there so fast?
We've been here while you were counting
your
money.
Oh, that's when I went to the rescue.
Yes.
So you want to start with the physician who had our request?
No. We're going to start down here at the bottom. It says, in our belief, any picture of the alcoholic which leaves out his physical factor is incomplete. The doctor's theory that we have an allergy to alcohol interests us. As laymen, our opinions to its soundness may, of course, mean little. But as ex-problem drinkers, we can say that his explanation makes good sense. It explains many things which we cannot otherwise account. Now, Charlie.
The only thing I've got to say is I better quit going to the restroom.
You just shouldn't take so long.
Well, as Joe says, this is the first time we can find in written history a reference to the fact that the body is affected as well as the mind. And he talks here about an allergy. Now, if the purpose of a textbook is to transfer information from the mind of one human being to another, increasing the knowledge of the user of the book, then it's going to be based upon the understanding of the words that are used in the book. If the reader of the book or the writer of the book writes or uses a certain word and has a certain understanding of it, and the reader of the book reads that word but has a different understanding of it, then the information that comes through is going to be incomplete and garbled information. And there seems to be a few key words in the big book that have given most of us a lot of difficulty in the past. I think probably the first one that really gave me a hard time is this word allergy. You know, most of us, when we come to AA, we assume we know what an allergy is. I know that I made the assumption. And I knew if you were allergic to something and you got around it or you ate it or you drank it, there would be some physical indicator or manifestation of that allergy that you could see. For instance, if you're allergic to strawberries and you eat them, you'll normally break out in a rash. The rash being the manifestation of the allergy. If you're allergic to milk and you drink it, you'll normally have a bad case of dysentery. Dysentery being the manifestation or the indicator of that allergy. If you're allergic to certain plants, such as ragweeds, you get around them, your eyes itch, your nose itch, you sneeze, your eyes water, all physical manifestations of that allergy. So I knew if you were allergic to something, there would have to be some indicator that you could see. So I come to AA, and they said to me, Charlie, you're allergic to alcohol. You'll never be able to safely drink it again as long as you live. And I said, how the hell can I be allergic to alcohol? When I drink alcohol, I don't break out in a rash. I don't have a bad case of dysentery. Once in a while I would, depending on what I drank, but I usually didn't. Note it may make my eyes, nose, itch, water, and cause me to sneeze. And I said, I don't understand what you're talking about. You need to explain that to me. Well, they said, you don't need to understand. They said, the only thing you need to know is you just can't drink it. And I would go from person to person to person to person, trying to get somebody to explain this allergy thing to me. And the answer was always the same. What the hell difference does it make? Forget the allergy. You can't drink, and that's all you need to know. Now, if you're an alcoholic like I am, and you've got a keen intellectual alcoholic mind, and you get a question like that dangling out here in front of you, if you don't get the answer to it, sooner or later it's going to run you out of your mind. So one day, in complete sheer desperation, I went to a source of information that has never failed me since that time. I went to a dictionary, and I looked up the word allergy. And the same as with most words, you find several definitions of it, depending on how you're using it. But I found the one I think fits me exactly. When it said an allergy is an abnormal reaction to any food, beverage, substance of any kind, an abnormal reaction. So I started looking back through my drinking history to see where I was abnormal when it comes to alcohol. And to my amazement, I realized I don't know what's normal, and I don't know what's abnormal. Because the only thing I knew about drinking alcohol is the way I drank it, and the way that those people drank it who drank with me, and if they didn't drink like I did, we didn't drink together. So to see if I'm abnormal, the first thing I've got to do is find out what's normal. So I went to some of these normal, social, temperate, moderate drinkers. Those that drink alcohol and they don't have any trouble with it. And I asked them to explain to me, how do you feel whenever you have a couple drinks of alcohol? And they usually got an answer like this. Well, we can go home from work, they said, tired, tense, and wrought up from the day's work. We can have a couple of drinks before dinner, and we get kind of a comfortable, relaxing feeling, and we'll go ahead and have dinner, and then we probably won't drink any more that night. Well, I don't feel that way when I drink alcohol. When I take a drink of alcohol, as it crosses my lips begin to tingle. It hits my teeth, and they kind of chatter up and down. It strikes my tongue, and I can feel my tongue begin to grow and expand and swell. It hits my cheeks, and they start fluttering in and out. At the same time, I feel it passing through my sinus cavities into my forehead, and I begin to get a feeling in my forehead which is absolutely indescribably wonderful. Now, I haven't even swallowed the damn stuff yet. I just got it in my mouth. When I swallow that alcohol, you know what happens. As it goes down through my esophagus, great things begin to take place. I feel my chest begin to grow and expand and get bigger and bigger and bigger. Hits my stomach and just immediately explodes like a bomb. I feel it racing through my arms and they're getting longer and longer and longer. Hits my hands and fingers and they begin to tingle and vibrate. At the same time it's racing through my arms, it's racing through my legs. My legs are getting longer and longer. I'm getting taller and taller, and it hits my feet and toes, and they get a hot, intense, burning, exciting, get up and go somewhere and do something feeling. I don't understand a comfortable, relaxing feeling whenever you have a drink of alcohol. These people told me something that absolutely amazed me. They said, Charlie, when we have a couple of drinks, we begin to get a slightly tipsy, out of control feeling. And they said, we don't like that slightly tipsy, out of control feeling. Therefore, one or two drinks is all we want to drink. You know, for most people, normal people, when they drink, alcohol is a sedative. It's a downer. It's supposed to give you a slightly tipsy, out of control feeling. When I put a couple drinks in me, and it goes into my mind, I do not get a slightly tipsy, out of control feeling. I get a very exciting, in control feeling. For me, it is an upper. For me, it's a stimulant. For normal people, it's a downer. So I react abnormally to start with here in the effect that it has on my mind to start with. Then they also said to me, Charlie, after we get a couple drinks in our system, not only do we get a slightly tipsy, out of control feeling, they said we begin to experience a feeling of nausea. And they said, we don't like that feeling of nausea. Therefore, one or two drinks is all we want to take. Now, when I put it in my system, I don't experience a feeling of nausea. It produces an actual physical craving in my body that is beyond my ability to control the amount I'm going to drink after one start. Their body says, puke it up, and mine says, put some more in here. So I react abnormally to alcohol in two ways. First in my mind, also in my body. Now, 9 people out of 10 that drink alcohol, that's the way they react to alcohol. 1 person out of 10 reacts like I do, and the only difference between normal and abnormal is what the majority of the people do. Therefore, we 1 out of 10 are considered to be allergic to alcohol. Absolutely amazed me when I began to talk to these people and begin to find out how they really react to alcohol, Joe.
You know, there's no must in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, but there's some must in this book. In fact, there's a whole lot of them. One of them is right there, said, we must believe that the body of the alcoholic is quite as abnormal as his mind. 2 different things. Charlie just talked a little bit about the physical allergy to alcohol. We're going to talk a little more about it because the book does. You know, he tells us about it here on page Roman numeral page 24, but he's afraid we're going to miss this information, so he's going to tell it to us again on Roman numeral page 26.
A good textbook never tells you anything, but what it doesn't repeat it, expand on it, and give you more information about it.
In Roman numeral page 26, it says, we believe, and so suggested a few years ago, that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics. Boy, I used to hate that word. I was pronounced a chronic alcoholic in my lifetime. Hated it. I'm not too happy about it now. But I understand what chronic means, too, because chronic simply means just doing the same things over and over and over again. That's all that means, so it's not too bad. On these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy. And Charlie talked about this allergy to alcohol, that once we start to drink, we crave more. And the book says that the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. This phenomenon, he didn't understand what this allergy really was, so he called it a phenomenon. He didn't understand about metabolism as we do today, so he called it a phenomenon simply because he didn't quite understand about it yet. And it's limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. Those 9 people that Charlie talked about who drink safely, who have 1 or 2 or 3 or sometimes 4 drinks, and they don't have the physical allergy to alcohol. Only 1 out of 10 has a physical allergy to alcohol, and some of those allergies are either, some people get them instantly when they start drinking, some people gain them slowly over a period of time, which happened to me. Charlie was an instant alcoholic. We've talked about it. And I developed mine slowly over a period of a long time. I crossed over into that place where I had a physical allergy to alcohol. He said these allergic types could never safely use any form of alcohol at all. And once having formed the habit and found they cannot break it, once having lost their self-confidence or reliance upon things human, the problems pile upon them and become astonishingly difficult to solve. Once we become an alcoholic, some of us are instantly, in my case, slowly over a period of a long time, I crossed over into that line into alcoholism, and once that happens, we can't drink safely ever again. And I say a simple little thing for me is once the cucumber becomes a pickle, it'll never be a cucumber again. And that's kind of what they're saying here, Tony.
Okay, once again, we're just dealing with words. To one who's allergic to strawberries, that's manifested by a rash. You can see it. To one who's allergic to milk, that's manifested by dysentery. You can see it. To one who's allergic to ragweeds, that's manifested by itchy, watery eyes, nose, and sneezing. You can see it. To one who's allergic to alcohol, that's manifested by the phenomenon of craving, the actual physical craving that is developed in the body after we've had one or two drinks. You can't see it. You can only feel it. And that's where I was confused, because I thought if you were allergic to something, it had to be something you could see. You can't see this phenomenon of craving. You can only feel it. And only alcoholics feel it. Normal drinkers never feel the phenomenon of craving. Normal drinkers, when they drink, they get all they want every time they drink. One, two, or three drinks. We alcoholics, when we drink, we never get all we want. That phenomenon of craving is so strong that we're going to drink it and drink it and drink it and drink it until we pass out or we get locked up or we get some way or other, period. So I think it's important that we understand the allergy we're talking about here is not something you can see. It's only what you can feel, and only alcoholics feel it.
Those alcoholics that drink two or three or four drinks, they get all they want to drink, you know. A lot of them want to go to bed right after that. Well, I take two or three or four drinks, and I want to go to town. And, man, you can get in trouble going to town, because I did that. You know, this book don't tell us something that it doesn't repeat it again. And now he's going to talk some more about various types of alcoholics. He talked about the type of alcoholic over here. These allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. Now, on Roman numeral page 28, he's going to talk about five more different types of alcoholics. And Joe, you ready?
Okay.
In fact, Joe's made a very exhaustive survey on non-alcoholics. He loves to watch non-alcoholics drink.
Yeah.
You want to talk about that?
Yeah, I've been studying
them
for years on airplanes, and everywhere I see them, I love to watch alcoholics. It's strange. It's strange.
Non-alcoholics.
It's a whole different world. It's completely different than our drinking world. You know, they get those drinks, and as soon as the plane get up there, they get those drinks, and they got little sticks. They got some kind of ceremony. They stir them a lot. And they get them all stirred up. You know what they do? They set them there and read their magazines. Sometimes they forget them. Sometimes they, you know, we saw a guy one time on a plane get off the plane, and he poured half of his drink in his cup, half of it. It ain't but an ounce and a half. And he poured a half of his ounce and a half in there and mixed it up.
Put his cap back on his body.
Put a little top back in, put it in his pocket, it's nice and safe. Child asked him, said, "What are you going to do with the rest of that you put in your pocket?" He said, "I'm going to have another drink when I get home." Now, that's normal. But we call that sick, see?
That's alcohol abuse, if I've ever heard of it.
Yeah. It's alcohol abuse. You know, when I first sobered up, I was a waiter, and I would serve drinks at night. I don't suggest it, but if you ain't got another job, it'll work. I stayed sober doing it. But, one night, the guy come in, and I was serving a little party. He said, he has shocked me. I'm here. I am 6 months sober. I became interested in those people. And he said, "Joe, give me another drink. I lost my drink." And it shocked me. I said, "You did what?" He said, "I lost my drink. I set it down somewhere. I need another one." You know, I had to realize in 18 to 19 years of drinking, I had never lost a drink. lost my car. See, they lose drinks. They don't lose cars. losing your car is abnormal. Okay.
Let's go to Roman numeral 28.
Yeah.
Now, he's talked about the phenomenon of craving. He's talked about that's the manifestation of the allergy. We've talked about the fact that when we take a drink, the physical craving develops. We can't stop drinking. Now, he's going to talk about five different kinds of alcoholics. But then he's going to tell us that we all have this one thing in common, this physical allergy to alcohol. Let's see what he has to say about this. Joe?
So the classification of alcoholics seems most difficult, and in much detail is outside the scope of this book. He said there are, of course, the psychopaths who are emotionally unstable, so we're all familiar with this type. They're always going on the wagon for keeps. They are over-remorseful and make many resolutions, but never a decision.
We call that type one.
There is a type of man who is unwilling to admit that he cannot take a drink. He plans various ways of drinking. He changes his brand or his environment.
That's type two.
There is a type who always believes that after being entirely free from alcohol for a period of time, he can take a drink without danger.
That's type three.
There is a manic depressive type who is perhaps the least understood by his friends and about whom a whole chapter could be written.
That's type four. Now, I always thought I was the next one in type five.
Then there are types entirely normal in every respect, except in effect alcohol has upon them. They're often able, intelligent, friendly people.
I used to read that and I'd wonder, well, how did he know so much about me anyhow?
He said, all these, this is the point he wants to bring home, all these that he just described, and all of us in this room this afternoon who are alcoholics, we all have one symptom in common. And that is that we cannot start drinking without developing the phenomenon of craving. That's the thing we have in common. This phenomenon, as we have suggested, may be the manifestation of an allergy, which differentiates these people and sets them apart as a distinct entity. It has never been, by any treatment of which we are familiar, permanently eradicated. The only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. In other words, once we get this physical allergy to alcohol, there's no cure for it. It'll always be with us forever. That's why we can't drink. We see people all the time and they going back out thinking they can drink. They can't drink because of the allergy. We couldn't do it safely either. And the only thing he has to suggest for that condition is don't drink.
It really doesn't make any difference either whether we're born with this allergy or whether we drank ourselves into it. I'm sure I was born with it. First drink I ever took, the craving took over and I ended up drunk. I drank alcohol 26 years. I don't ever remember taking one drink of anything that had alcohol in it. One always led to 2 to 3 to 6 to 8 to 10 and etc. Joe drank several years safely. But one day, he began to have the same problem I did. He crossed that line, whatever it is, the phenomenon of craving developed, and from that day on, he couldn't drink without getting drunk. So it really doesn't make any difference whether we're born with it or whether we drank ourselves into it. That's the way we are today. That's what's so important that we understand. Nor does it make any difference how long it takes us to get drunk. You know, this allergy was so pronounced in me by the time I finally stopped drinking that if I'd take a drink right now at 15 minutes to 5, I'll guarantee you by 7:30 I found a policeman and I'm in jail somewhere. Some of you might drink one or two today, three or four tomorrow, five or six the next day. And it may take you 3, 4, 5, 6 days to find your policeman and go to jail. But what difference does it make? The first drink is what triggers it. And we end up drunk, and we end up sick, and we end up in all kinds of trouble. Now, that's really about the only thing we've really got in common in AA, is this physical allergy to alcohol, this phenomenon of craving. That's why in AA we need to discuss alcoholism only. We don't need to discuss any other problems in AA because the only one we got in common really is the physical allergy. That's the one we can all come together on. That's the one we can all agree on. Now, this was the doctor's opinion back in the 1930s. In the 1930s, they didn't know very much about metabolism. Today, they know a lot more about metabolism. Today, they've come up with information that pretty well proves the doctor's opinion. And we're going to put a little chart up here on the board. We're going to talk about it for a little while. And let us be the first to say this is not AA information that we're going to put on the screen. AA doesn't get involved as to why we're allergic, because if we did, it would surely create controversy. But what it really does, it pretty well proves the doctor's opinion. You know, today they know if you put anything in your body, such as a piece of beefsteak, your mind and body recognize what it is. Certain organs of the body produce some things called enzymes. The enzymes attack the beefsteak, break it down into usable and non-usable items. The vitamins, the amino acids, the proteins are retained by the body, and what it can't use, it will dissipate and get rid of through the urinary and the intestinal tract. The body will do that with about anything you put in it, as long as it's not a deadly poison that kills you before it can metabolize it. It does the same thing with a liquid that it does with a solid. If you'll notice in this picture, in the center of the line, we have those nine people who drink safely, or they are at ease with alcohol. They take a drink, put it in their system, and mind and body recognizes the alcohol. The enzyme production starts. The enzyme attacks the alcohol and begins to break it down. In the first stage, it becomes what they call acetaldehyde. In the second stage, it becomes diacetic acid. In the third stage, it becomes acetone. In the final stage, it becomes a simple carbohydrate made up of water, sugar, and carbon dioxide. The water will be dissipated through the urinary and intestinal tract. The sugar is energy, calories. Empty calories, of course, none of the amino acids, none of the vitamins, none of the things necessary for life, but a form of energy. The body will burn the sugar and store the excess as fat to be used at a later date. The carbon dioxide will be dissipated through the lungs. Now, in the normal social temperate moderate drinker, this metabolism takes rate at approximately 1 ounce per hour. I know it'll vary with different people, but that's the average. If they don't drink more than an ounce per hour, they can't get drunk, because their body's going to metabolize it, burn it up, and get rid of it at that rate. Very seldom do you see a normal, social, temperate, moderate drinker drinking more than an ounce per hour. Remember, they get a slightly tipsy, out-of-control beginnings of a nauseous feeling. And if you're with one of them and they're drinking more than an ounce per hour, you better stand back, because they're probably going to puke on you after a while. It's not going to stay in there if they're drinking it that fast at that rate. Now, that's the normal. Let's look at the left-hand side of that picture. That's we alcoholics. We take a drink and we put it in our system. The same thing happens. The mind and body recognize what it is. The enzyme production starts. It attacks the alcohol. Breaks it down first to acetaldehyde, then to diacetic acid, then to acetone. But it seems as though in the body of we alcoholics, the enzymes necessary to break it from acetone down to the simple carbohydrate are not there in the same quantities and or qualities as they are in the body of the non-alcoholic. Therefore, it stays in our system for a much longer period of time as acetone. Now, it's been proven today that acetone ingested into the human system that remains there for an appreciable period of time will create an actual physical craving for more of the same. And before it can be turned from acetone into the simple carbohydrate, the craving causes us to take another drink. Now, we take the second drink. We've still got part of the first drink in there as acetone. And now we add the acetone from the second drink. And the acetone level goes up and the craving becomes harder. That demands a third drink. We got part of the first, most of the second. Now we add that in from the third. The acetone level goes up, the craving becomes harder, and that demands a fourth drink. As we drink the alcohol itself, the craving becomes more and more and more and more, and we can't get it stopped until we end up drunk and sick and in all kinds of trouble. You know, never in all my years of drinking did I get all the alcohol I wanted. I got a hell of a lot more than I needed, thousands of times, but I never got all that I wanted. I'm laying there, I'm sick as a damn dog, I'm about to die, and I'm still craving another drink. As we drink, that craving goes up and up and up and up and up, and that explains to me why we never, never get enough alcohol. Now, this wouldn't be so bad if it never got any worse. But we know not only are we in the grips of a physical illness, we're in the grips of a progressive physical illness. We know that the longer we drink, the more we drink, the worse it gets. Probably for two reasons. Today we know that alcohol itself is a destroyer of human tissue. The longer we drink, the more we drink, the more tissue we destroy. It seems as though the first organs of the body that alcohol attacks and begins to destroy happen to be the liver and the pancreas. Today they know the liver and the pancreas are the two organs of the body that produce the enzymes necessary to metabolize alcohol. And as we drink and as we begin to destroy those organs, the enzyme production becomes less and less. The ability to metabolize becomes less and less. The craving becomes harder and harder, and the drinking becomes harder and harder also due to damage to the body. Another factor that enters here is the actual aging process. We know as we get older, the body begins to shut down on the production of everything. I wish that were not true, but it is. I'm experiencing it in several areas. If I would take a drink today, I wouldn't start where I left off X number of years ago. If I would take a drink today, the craving would be harder, the drinking would be harder, the resultant trouble would be harder also. So not only am I in the grips of a physical illness, it is a progressive physical illness due to damage to the body and due to the aging factor. When I saw this information, then I could fully accept the fact there's no way I can successfully drink alcohol. Until I saw this information, I knew there had to be some way I could drink without getting drunk. And I almost destroyed me in the process trying to find it. But when I saw this, this closed the mind. No longer can I safely drink alcohol. And when I once recognized that fact, then I had to start looking at another idea. Well, if I can't successfully drink it, then how do I keep from drinking it? You know, I have a friend who is allergic to, of all things, fish. When he eats fish, his throat swells up and he almost chokes to death. Now, the fact that he's allergic to fish is beside the point if he didn't eat fish. But he's also got something else wrong with him. There's something up here in his head that isn't right when it comes to fish. There's a light bulb that doesn't go on, a switch that doesn't contact or something. Because from time to time, his mind tells him that it's okay to eat fish. And he'll eat that fish, and sure enough, every time, he's right back in that hospital. And I'll bet it always starts like this. Well, I haven't had any fish in 30 days. Surely I could have one piece of fish. Or it's that damn orange roughy I've been eating. If I'd eat nothing but halibut, it would be okay. Or you might even say it's them damn people I've been eating fish with if I'd just change my crowd. Whatever the reason, his mind gives him permission to eat the fish. Then the allergy takes over, then he ends up in the hospital. Now, I'm the same way when it comes to alcohol. You know, the fact that I'm allergic to alcohol is really beside the point. If I don't drink alcohol. Now, too long in AA have we concentrated on the physical allergy only. That's not really our problem. Our real problem lies in our mind, telling us that it's okay to drink alcohol. And Dr. Silkworth also addresses that issue in the doctor's opinion. It's extremely important we understand this, Joe.
Okay. Let's bring this to the mind. You know, total absence in the body, the only way we can stop this craving, total absence in the body has to take place in the mind. Absence is in the mind, not the body. He describes how we do the mind at the bottom of page, Roman number 26. Men and women drink essentially...
Back up a page.
Men and women drink essentially because they like... Roman numeral 26 now. Because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot after a time differentiate the true from the false.
You know, many alcoholics are highly offended when you make the statement that men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. Many alcoholics will say, oh, no, 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 that's not the reason I drink. They say the reason I drink is I love the taste of alcohol. And I wouldn't argue with them whether they do or not. You know, I love the taste of Cold Mountain Spring Water, too. And I never did sit down and drink a case of Cold Mountain Spring Water. Alcohol does something for me that Cold Mountain Spring Water doesn't do. As a kid growing up, I was always on the outside of the crowd looking in. Always wanted to be a part of, always knew I could not be. Always knew that whatever I said, whatever I did would be the wrong thing. People would laugh and I would be embarrassed. And one night a guy gave me a drink of moonshine whiskey. And all those feelings disappeared. I was allowed to ask a girl to dance with me. Never had danced with a girl before in my life. I was allowed to take her home from the dance. Never took a girl home before in my life. I was allowed to get in the back seat of a 36 Chevrolet and do some things I'd been wanting to do for a long, long time. I love the effect produced by alcohol. We don't drink it because we like the taste of it. My God, how many times have we reached in the trunk of a car, got out a bottle of vodka? It's 110 degrees in the shade and probably 130 or 40 in that trunk. And we take a straight snort of that vodka. We say, yeah, yeah, man, shit. Wasn't it good?
Yeah. You know, there are many, many effects by which we drink, and Charlie described one there, and I think we can all pretty much identify with that. It changed the way that I thought and the way that I felt and let me do things that I normally wouldn't do. But we know that alcoholism is a progressive illness, too, and over a period of time it gets worse. And as time went by in my life, eventually I began to overdo some of those things that I enjoyed doing so well. And I began to get in a little trouble here and there. And mornings I would wake up and I would say, I'd have a little guilt, a little shame, a little remorse for some of the things I did last night or last week, which caused me to drink some more to get rid of those effects of guilt, shame, and remorse. And we know that as time goes by, alcoholism becomes progressively worse. In the end, for me, I was drinking for the sickest effect of all, and that was total oblivion. And there's only one thing wrong with oblivion, isn't there? Is you wake up. And then you have to start all over again. And that's where I found myself, the sickest effect of all. So there are many, many effects by which we drink.
Okay. They are restless, irritable, and discontented unless they again experience the sense and ease and comfort comes at once by taking a few drinks. Now, just before we drink, they are restless, irritable, and discontented. Then we begin to think about how great a few drinks would make us feel. Drinks which we see others taking with impunity. Now, after they have succumbed to desire again, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops, it passes the stages of the well-known spree, emerging remarkable the firm resolution not to drink again. This is repeated over and over. Unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope of his recovery. Now he talks about the triggering mechanism that triggers to the craving. See, the craving could never hurt us if we never took the first drink. Mine ago.
Yeah.
Okay. Remember when you was brand new, they said if you quit drinking, you're going to feel better? You're going to feel better, all right. You're going to feel restlessness better, irritability better, resentment better.
Discontent.
Discontent better.
Yeah, come in all clear. Now, we described this side because this body, this side, physical side, we can't drink safe. That's part of our problem. And it's great to understand that, and every alcoholic ought to know that. If he's an alcoholic, he's got to live with this illness, and he should know something about it. But he said, this is academic, but he didn't take the first drink anyway. So the main problem of the alcoholic is the first drink, not the body. So because of this physical allergy, we cannot safely drink alcohol. That's part of our problem. But the main problem of the alcoholic is in his mind is the first drink. If we never took the first drink, we would never set off the craving in the body. Now over here, we developed this little problem. Charlie's got it way back on this. No, I ain't going back up. Okay. Because we have a very complex emotional life, mind and emotions. These are God-given. We got to work on them, straighten them out, but ours gets out of control because of self and become very painful to us. And every human being has this problem to a certain extent. So we're not unique in that way. When these things build up, when they get up to a certain place, they make us uncomfortable. Yeah. There you go. Make us uncomfortable. Sometimes doing, and Dr. Carl Jung, he said he thinks everybody searches for wholeness. Everybody's searching for comfort. Some people find it in different things, but we happen to have a few drinks. And we notice when we have a few drinks, we feel better. We get a sense and ease and comfort that comes at once with taking a few drinks.
I remember the non-alcoholic gets a slightly tipsy, out of control, yes, beginnings of a nauseous feeling. We alcoholics get a sense of ease and comfort,
right.
A very exciting, in-control feeling.
That's right. Okay. And we reach over and take a few drinks, and the drinks work and they make us feel better. But also at the same time, they'll bring us this comfort, but they will set off the craving in the body. And we go through the well-known spree, finish up, come up for air, repeat an alcoholic national anthem. I will never do that again.
Now we're sober.
Now we're sober,
restless,
but we're restless,
irritable,
discontented.
And discontented. We're filled with shame, fear, guilt, and remorse. All the things that happened during that last drunk. Now we're thinking about them while we're sober.
Okay. Now when we're sober over here, we're not thinking about what we went through. All this trouble down here. We're thinking about sensing the easy comfort. It's going to come taking a few drinks. So I reach over and take a few drinks. We get a little sense of ease and comfort, but it sets off the craving in the body. We go through a well-known spree. We end up in trouble again. We get out of trouble, and we go right back to the same thing. So the mind is putting in the first drink, and the body's taking over producing the craving. We got two problems. We can't drink because of the body. We can't quit because of the mind. Therefore, we are powerless over alcohol. It's a very simple thing once we see it. And they say once you understand the problem, the solution is simple. And it really is. It's a very complex problem. But the solution is simple once you understand it. The solution is in the mind, not the body. All we got to do here is make some changes in our makeup, our psychic change. This is the only solution, is a psychic change. We can change here, but we'll never take the first drink. Never took the first drink, we'll never set off the allergy in the body. You know, for many years I tried to control this with willpower. A lot of people think willpower is the answer. You know, I was restless, irritable, and discontented. I'd build up to this point. So I'd get old Will and put him in here and say, sick him, Will, I'm through with this drinking. An alcoholic's got a lot of willpower. And when he decides, when he means business, when he brings Will out, he really means business. Every once in a while, Will says, order two drinks, I want one too. But even over my willpower, I would finally build up to a certain point, and overcome my willpower, and I still take the first drink. So willpower is not the answer. But if we could make what the steps focus in on, the personality change sufficient to recover. As a result of the step, by taking the steps, we have a personality change sufficient. And we can live below this line. We will never experience the obsession. And we never experience the obsession, we will never take the first drink. And we never take the first drink, we will never set off the allergy in the body. This, we believe, is a solution to our problem. Real simple and easy to do the way the plan is laid out, the steps.
The next paragraph says, on the other hand, and strange as this may seem to those who do not understand, once a psychic change has occurred, the very same person who seemed doomed, who had so many problems and be despaired of ever solving them, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol, the only effort necessary being that required to follow a few simple rules. Now this thing, if I could find a way to live and be sober, and not be restless, irritable, and discontented. If I could find a way to live and be sober, and not be filled with shame, fear, guilt, and remorse, just maybe I could find a way to live where I could have the same sense of ease and comfort, yet be sober at the same time. And if I can find a way to live where I can have that sense of ease and comfort that a drink used to give me, yet be sober at the same time, then I don't need to take a drink to change the way that I feel. And that's what recovery is about. And that's what the program is about. And the greatest promise in the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous is having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. Appendix 2 in the big book says, a spiritual awakening is a personality change sufficient to recover from alcoholism. Our personality is made up by the way we think, by the way we feel, by our ideas, our attitudes toward life, people, places, and things in general. Always before, my old ideas and attitudes kept me restless, irritable, and discontented. Kept me filled with shame, fear, guilt, and remorse. But now that I've had a spiritual awakening through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm sober and I don't feel that way anymore. I've had a psychic change. Dr. Silkworth calls it that. The book will call it a spiritual experience, a spiritual awakening, or a personality change, and they all deal with how we feel right up here in our head. And how I feel in my head determines whether I need alcohol to make me feel better or not. And if I work the program according to the book, I find that peace of mind, serenity, happiness necessary for long-term sobriety. And that's recovery from alcoholism. That's not just going to meetings. That's not just being a member of the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's applying the program so we can have this personality change sufficient to recover. And if we recover, then we don't take the drink. And if we don't take the drink, then the allergy can't hurt us. So you see, I have recovered from a hopeless condition of mind and body called alcoholism. I'll always be an alcoholic, but I no longer live in alcoholism, Joe.
As Charlie says, you know, the most dangerous part of the illness is when we're not drinking. Yeah. The reason it's the most dangerous part of the illness is because we're thinking about drinking. You see, we're restless, irritable, discontented, full of guilt, shame, and remorse. Dr. Jung said ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which were the guiding force of the lives of these people, are suddenly cast to one side. That's a solution. That's brought about, as Dr. Silkworth said, a psychic change dealing with the mind, a personality change dealing with the mind, spiritual experience dealing with the mind, a spiritual awakening dealing with the mind. Ideas, emotions, and attitude, guilt, shame, and remorse, restless, that's all dealing with the mind. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in the mind rather than in the body. And I can't just come to these meetings and sit on my duff in these meetings because the fellowship is full of people who are just as powerless as I am. Hell, they can't help me other than to help me not drink. But they can't really, they can help me with the solution if I will allow some of them to do that. Thank God there are enough people in AA today who will help you and sponsor you and who will guide you through these steps so you can have that spiritual experience. So you can recover from alcoholism. But just going to a whole lot of meetings is not enough. I mean, sitting in a chicken house won't make you a hen either, you know. Sitting in AA in these meetings won't make you recover from alcoholism. The fellowship is a powerful thing. It will help me stay sober and help me not drink for a long time. A long time. But eventually I'm going to have to apply these steps, these few simple rules to me. And then I will have a change in my ideas, emotions, and attitude and spiritual awakening. And then I, too, can help somebody else, someone who's helped me.
You see, this information we've discussed this afternoon out of the Big Book, this is the kind of information we need to be discussing with the newcomers to AA. I heard somebody say to a newcomer the other day, this guy was probably in his 50s. God, you could tell he was an alcoholic if you saw him clear across the room. Rough, tough, red face, red nose. He was one of us for sure. And somebody said to him, come on in and we're gonna love you till you learn to love yourself. I wonder what went through that guy's mind when they said that. What we need to be saying is, come on in here. If you drink like we drink, we understand. Let us tell you what our problem was. And let's start talking about the illness of alcoholism, the exact nature of it, the physical allergy. Boy, that's news to him. He's wondered why he's been drinking that way for years. Let's talk about the obsession of the mind. He's worried to death that he doesn't have enough willpower to quit drinking. Let's tell him the exact nature of the illness, and we'll get him, we'll grab him, we'll hold him. God, so many people have turned and walked away from AA because nobody is telling them what their problem is. They're saying, come on in here, and we'll love you till you learn to love yourself. Joe, you got anything to add?
No, we have experienced these things. And we can sit down. We have the ability to sit down with a newcomer and help him to identify his problem. And we're the only people on earth that experience the same craving. It's the same obsession that he has experienced. And we understand it. I think it's very, and this is our responsibility. To help the new person see his problem through our problem. So.
Thank you all for being here. We've enjoyed it. We hope you have. We'll see you tonight.